Hello everyone, welcome back to the Deep Psychology Podcast. This is episode 2 of my November series on relationships. And today we're going to be talking in depth about romantic infatuation. Welcome to the Deep Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, Ross Edwards, author, coach, and podcaster. We cover deep insights into your psychology, helping you grow in psyche and spirit. Make sure to subscribe to Deep Psychology on Spotify or Apple to stay up to date. You can also visit the website deep-psychology.com, visited by tens of thousands of people every month for lots of free resources. If you want to go deeper with this work, you might like to do coaching with me. Head to the website for more details. It's time for today's episode. So this is a topic that I find just really fascinating on a personal level, on the level of my own relationships, current and past, and for understanding people around me, for understanding the world around me, and for people that I work with one-to-one. I find this is always a theme that comes up, not just the topic of relationships, but specifically the topic of romantic infatuation. It's always sort of, it always appears now and then, sometimes more than just now and then, sometimes it's really a sort of big factor in the coaching process. So today I really want to sort of lay out what romantic infatuation is, how we typically view it, how we interpret it as a culture. And I'm also going to suggest how we should really view it, and also the traps of romantic infatuation. And I might be a bit of a buzzkill today, because a lot of this is going to be quite damning of romantic infatuation. And that isn't to downplay its role, its importance in human relationships. I think it is a really important phase. It's a really enjoyable phase. I think my critique and my sort of anger comes from the way that we are taught about romantic infatuation and the way it's sort of presented in culture. But we're going to get to that in about 5-10 minutes time. Let's begin by talking about what romantic infatuation is. So we all sort of know what it is. It's the first year or two of a relationship where we're falling in love with the other person, with each other. It's intense, it's exciting, we're discovering each other. We are meeting a new person. It's like, wow, there's a new person in my life, this is amazing. I want to get to know them more and more, and they're fascinating to me. And there's a lot of sexual energy. In fact, this is a stage in a relationship where sexual energy is at its peak. And if you look in your life at when your sexual energy was at its peak, it's likely in the romantic infatuation phase. Certainly in my case, that has always been the case. I mentioned something there that seems like a side point, but it's really not. I said it's a stage. It's a phase that we go through in our relationship. Now, that is a huge thing to realize right there, because immediately when we call it a phase, we realize, okay, it comes from somewhere, and then it serves a certain purpose for a length of time, usually between 1 and 2 years. And then eventually it wears off. So the concept of a stage is really important. And it also has us realize that it's a necessary element of a romantic relationship, but it's insufficient. Because if it wasn't a phase, if this just was the entirety of a relationship, it would be sufficient. Romantic infatuation would be sufficient. That's why it's certainly not sufficient, because it it is a phase, it does come to an end. And if you've been in a long-term relationship, you will know that it comes to an end. It's characterized by romance, passion, and lust. So everything has a sort of rosy glow to it. Literally, your whole life can change during romantic infatuation. It's not just when you're with the person you're falling in love with. It's when you're not with them. When you're not with them, you're wanting to be with them. You're remembering them. You're thinking about your times together. You're looking forward to what's going to come. You're planning new things you can do together, new romantic things. Your imagination is at its peak. You know, you're imagining where you can go on holiday. You imagine trips you can take. You're imagining dinners you can go out for. You can imagine, you know, any sort of activity you can do with the other person as a form of fun. There's novelty here because this person is new in our life. You know, they may have been a colleague, they may have been a friend, they may have been a stranger, but in any case, it's novel in the sense that we have never had a sexual relationship with them before, right? Now, that might be different if you've been previously in a relationship with this person. I'm not sure how it works in that case, but as a general principle, there's novelty. You know, this other person is essentially a stranger. You know, even after a year or two of romantic infatuation, they are still a stranger. There's still a lot you don't know about the person. We'll come back to this point. But certainly that novelty factor is a big, it plays a big role in romantic infatuation because novelty gets us inspired in all fields of life, not just in romance and love. When you combine that with the sexual passion and the energy and so on, it's a potent combination. There's a forming of attachment here. So bear in mind that this person was either a stranger, a friend, or an acquaintance, right? Somewhere along those lines. There's obviously exceptions, but usually, right, that's how it is. And in the period of romantic infatuation, they are going from being a stranger to being a lover. So they're actually becoming a part of you, a part of your life when they weren't before, right? So your life is expanding. It's new things are opening up to you. It's not just the person, it is everything that it brings, you know, wherever they live, the things you do together, the things they tell you about, all their life experience, their family, their friends, you know, all of that comes in, right? In those first 2 years, that's when it sort of floods in. And that, again, it just sort of fuels the sense of novelty and the passion and the curiosity there. You want to be with each other all the time. I mean, it's funny to me looking back, you know, looking back at my periods of romantic infatuation. This really is true. Like, it's like a magnet draws you to them. Whenever you can, you want to go and see them. It's like your friendships can go down the toilet a little bit. Your other commitments can go down the toilet a little bit because you're so engaged with this person. And the thought of wanting to be separate from them seems a bit strange to you at this point. To round up what it is, I'll say that it's very yummy when it works. You know, it's sexually yummy, it's emotionally yummy. It's really quite something. There's certainly problems with it, but it's a very enjoyable phase. And this is one of the reasons that in culture, this is one of the reasons behind the relationship we have to it in culture, because it is so intense and so positive. It's because it's so yummy. That's why, right? So you can understand where it comes from, right? Let's talk about how we typically view romantic infatuation. This is really important because this will start to transition us into talking about sort of the limitations of it. if you look around at films, songs, plays, any sort of cultural artifact like that that deals with love, or you speak to friends and family, or you just sort of listen to how we speak about relationships and love and long-term partnerships, we implicitly talk about romantic infatuation as though it were the pinnacle or the goal. You know, that this is a standard by which to judge a relationship. To what degree is their romantic infatuation, right? Well, I'll get to the problems, but this is what we are doing all the time. We are taking romantic infatuation and we're making it from a phase into a goal, into something that we need to strive for no matter what stage of the relationship we are in. Now, being a bit vague about it, because I don't want to be too specific right now, give me a couple of minutes to do that. Don't you think it's a little bit problematic to take one phase that is the beginning phase of a relationship and make that the goal by which we judge all subsequent phases, which are fundamentally different? Because if those stages run on totally different sort of principles, how could we possibly judge them by the principles of romantic infatuation? We are doomed by definition, we are basically doomed to failure. We're doomed to looking down on those subsequent phases because they don't meet up to the criteria of romantic infatuation, which is, regardless of the specific faults with that, just by principle, is a big fault that we are making, right? I want you to really be aware of how you typically view romantic infatuation. You know, if you're in a long-term relationship right now, you may be well beyond that. You might look back and realize that, goodness me, we went out of romantic infatuation 20 years ago. In my case, it was probably about 5-6 years ago now, because we've been together for 7.5 years. You'll really look at your relationship and look at what you're judging it by. And you have to be very honest here. If you're judging it by romantic infatuation, by romance, by lust, by sexual energy, like constant sexual energy, by this really emotionally charged phase that you went through, you might just find it's really causing you a lot of problems in the relationship. You know, it's making you feel like there's something wrong, that you're with the wrong person, you know, they can't be my soulmate, they can't be, Prince Charming, because we're not experiencing romantic infatuation. I want you to be really honest with yourself, and I also want you to look very closely at the imagery you're receiving from your environment, because I can really pretty much guarantee that you are receiving romantic infatuation imagery. And this is sort of biasing you very subtly. You know, even things like Valentine's Day is largely it's a glorification of romantic infatuation. If try and say that three times very quickly. We're glorifying it because it's like we're putting it on a pedestal and we're making that the goal. You know, we feel this outrageous love and desire to be with each other all the time. Like, that's what we're celebrating. I want you just to be really aware of these factors, because it really impacts your relationship and how you view love and relationships in general. So I told you I was going to be pretty damning. Up till now, I feel like I've been reasonably objective, right? But now I'm going to start criticizing romantic infatuation. Let's start with how we should really view it. Well, on a positive note, we should view it as the stage that glues us together. You know, listen, in the first year or two of your relationship, you are going from being strangers to lovers. Now, that would be a lot more difficult without these really extreme sensations of love and sexual lust and passion and romance and the desire to be together and to get to know the other person at all costs, that would be really difficult to get bound together in some form of stable structure without romantic infatuation. You know, imagine you felt towards your husband or partner, long-term partner, a wife, then as you do now. You might, you know, it wouldn't have that same spice to it. And you might be attracted to them, but in and of itself, it might not be enough to propel you into like a long-term partnership with them. And I don't say that to say, well, if you feel like that, you don't love your partner. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that romantic infatuation is very intense, and it is a sort of, it's actually an artificially intense period. We're going to get to that. Without it, we might not be good to a partner as we are. So it's got this sort of cleverness to it. It's sort of like a sleight of hand that makes it the stage that glues us together. So you can interpret that in a positive way as a necessary thing for the relationship to begin and to form a structure. But on the other hand, well, there can be problems with that. We'll get to them. It's the beginning of getting to know the person. So this is one of the traps of romantic infatuation. That you are in a kind of altered state, a form of temporary madness. And that's not just my opinion. Literally, psychologists call it a form of temporary madness. Or there are psychologists that call it that. And you're getting to know someone in an altered state of consciousness, in a state of consciousness where you're literally, your brain is secreting greater levels of serotonin and I can't remember, but basically your brain is producing, has a chemical makeup, but it's got an altered chemical makeup during this period. And you're getting to know the person. Now, on one hand, of course, that helps you, that charges you, right? That gives you energy and it gives you like desire to get to know them. Because if you didn't have that, you might not care, quite honestly. You might not want to get to know them. But the other problem with it is that you are not seeing the person as they are. And this is one of the big traps that we're going to get to. You're getting to know the person in an altered state. What happens when you leave that altered state? After romantic infatuation, what is going to happen? Are you going to like what you see? We'll come back to this point. We should also see it as the first stage of a sequence of stages that lead to long-term commitment. So this is what I'm saying about it being a necessary but insufficient condition for long-term relationships. It's necessary because it's the glue that binds us together, or has at least the potential to. But at the same time, it's insufficient because it's a stage. And it is literally the first stage in our relationship. It's not the ultimate stage. It's not like the top of the pyramid where the rest of the relationship is just like a downward slide. No, it's the first stage, right? So we do not recognize this. I mean, look at any of the cultural iconography or imagery out there. No one will talk about it in these terms, right? Because it's not sexy to say it's a stage of relationship. It just it takes away the spice and the sort of intrigue of it, right? But I want you to really recognize that it is a stage. It's a stage. Just acknowledge it. It's a stage. Whenever you meet someone and you have this charge of sexual energy and love, know it's a stage. Enjoy it. But it's a stage. It will fade. That doesn't mean you're faulty. That doesn't mean the relationship is faulty necessarily. That doesn't mean the other person is faulty necessarily. Just enjoy falling in love. Enjoy having lots of sex. Enjoy all the romantic stuff. But realize this is the first stage. There is more to come. We should also view it, more starkly as an immature form of love. To be pretty honest about it, it doesn't take any real effort to fall into romantic infatuation. You know, think about it like this. When you're walking down the street, how many people are you attracted to? How many times do you sense a sort of sexual tension there, even with people you've never seen before? If you're honest with yourself, probably every day, if there's people around you, there's people sort of your age and people you're attracted to, probably every day you're having this. Now, all of these people are people you could quite easily fall into romantic infatuation with, whether you're married, been married for 20 years, or whether you're single. Lust turns into romantic infatuation. You know, within a month, you could literally be romantically infatuated with them. So where's the effort? There's not much effort involved, right? In a long-term relationship, there is a lot of effort. There's boredom, there's arguments, there's mundanity. Obviously, there's many beautiful moments, and there's that sort of sense of having a deep friendship and a deep companionship with another person, but it's a more mature form. It's like enjoying a nice healthy meal instead of just having fast food. You know, maybe the healthy meal doesn't give you that sort of hit that you get from fast food, but it's more satisfying. It goes deeper, right? So romantic infatuation is the fast food, essentially, and long-term relationships are like the healthy food, right? It's not immature. You know, romantic infatuation will happen even if you're a really highly developed person and you're old and you're falling in love again with someone. You will go through romantic infatuation, but what I say when I say immature, I mean it's a junior form of love. It doesn't really take much effort. It's not really based on anything other than sort of biological urges, essentially, and sexual attraction. Right, so we have to recognize that, and this is why we shouldn't put it on a pedestal. It doesn't really take much effort, and you've not really gained anything. You see, it doesn't really guarantee anything. It doesn't guarantee personal growth either. And to go along with this, we should see that it will eventually be subsumed to more profound and lasting structures that will actually enable us to really know the person, to develop long-term companionship, and to actually have the opportunity to experience personal growth. You're not really experiencing personal growth when you're just having lots of sex during romantic infatuation, because that's really easy. There's not really any weightlifting involved. Weightlifting happens when you've been living together for years and you're having some stupid argument. That's when the lifting happens, because you're seeing all your sort of lower self. You're seeing the lower self coming out, and that's when you're lifting the weight, right? So once we pass through romantic infatuation, we then go into a long-term commitment, and that is when the more profound and lasting relationship structures are created. So romantic infatuation will remain to some degree, or it'll sort of be under the surface and it'll sort of be supporting everything, but it is not the guide. It is not what we should be aiming for, and it is not what's going to be in charge. So we're going to round up this episode with really what I think is the key to take away from this is the traps of romantic infatuation. The first one is that you lose objective criteria. And the reason for this is because, as I said, romantic infatuation is basically a form of madness. It's temporary madness where you're in love and you're all loved up and you're romantic and you're sexually driven and so on. And you're sort of addicted to the other person, to be quite blunt about it, right? You do not have you're not operating on an objective level. You're operating on a biological sexual level. Now, that might be fine. The problem is that what happens after that? And who have you fallen in love with? You don't know who you've fallen in love with during romantic infatuation. Not really, because they too are romantically infatuated with you and they're in an altered state of consciousness. So you're in an altered state of consciousness, trying to understand someone who is also in an altered state of consciousness. You don't have an objective criterion there, you see? So what happens after romantic infatuation? Are you going to still be in love with that person? Are you going to actually like them for who they are? You know, what happens once all the chemically charged emotion wears off? Right, what happens? And I've seen this in myself, and I've seen it in people very close to me, that, oh my God, it's like they're either romantic infatuated with someone or they're in a long-term relationship with someone, and it seems like they're the only person who doesn't see the remarkable flaws of the other person, right? And you can actually get trapped in a relationship that is not right for you because you have been romantically infatuated. And the worst thing you can do, in my opinion, is get married during romantic infatuation. Now listen, I'm not here to tell you what to do with your life, so please don't take that as a hard piece of advice, but it's just an opinion. And I'm saying it to myself. And I've been with my current partner for 7.5 years, and I'm still like, let's give it a bit more time, you know, before we really discuss getting married. Like, you need to have an objective objective look at the person. It's like if you were hiring someone for a job interview, how well could you do it if you were high, right? You wouldn't do a job interview when you're high because you know that you wouldn't be able to judge properly. This is like a job interview, except it's the biggest fucking job interview you can do to your prospective partner, right? If you don't have any objective criteria, which you don't in the romantic infatuation phase, how can you choose the right candidate? This is, oh my goodness, this is one of the huge things we don't recognize as a culture, that we think we're finding the perfect partner during romantic infatuation, but no, we're just finding the perfect recipient of our charged desires. That is really it. We don't know the other person. You do not discover the other partner as they are, because you're both charged and you're both in an altered state, and you know, you've not developed any lasting structures together. You're not living together. You've not got any bills together. You've not got any really shared responsibilities, probably. You're not seeing each other every single day. You're seeing each other in a very sort of limited fashion, and you're putting on your best face and all the rest of it. So, sorry for that rant, but huge trap. You lose objective criteria. Oh my God. But I mean, wow. That, it's mind-blowing when you think of the consequences. You might say, well, in some ways that might be necessary. Yes, but nowadays we don't have to get married when we're 16. And we don't have to wait until we're married to have sex. So you have to pass through romantic infatuation before you learn make any long-term commitments to each other. This is one of the great things about living in the modern day, is that you can actually do this quite easily. You could quite easily see someone for a couple of years, pass through romantic infatuation, get a taste of the intimate bonding stage, which is just another word for the stage that comes after romantic infatuation, and say, well, shit, I didn't realize how flawed this other person was. I'm going, right? So this is beautiful. Another trap of romantic infatuation is that, and I've sort of alluded to this, I just want to make it very stark, is that when you choose to commit to someone during romantic infatuation phase, you're going to get blindsided once the romantic infatuation wears off, because you're going to discover them as they are. And we all get, you know, even if it turns out that it is the right person to build a long-term companionship with, we all get blindsided. You know, there's all kinds of things you'll discover in your partner if you start living together, for example, that you never even imagined. You know, they'll have dark periods in their life, and they'll have bad habits, and they'll have dark sides of their personality, and they'll have all kinds of projections, and they'll have fears, and they'll have hang-ups, and they'll have anxieties, and they'll have their own way of sort of controlling you and manipulating you, and they'll have all this stuff. You're going to see absolutely everything, right? So, and this applies to everyone. No one is exempt from this. Not even, of course, I'm not exempt from this. Do you think I don't have this stuff? Of course I have it. But the difference is to what degree. If you get romantically infatuated with a fucking psychopath, you will not see it during that phase. It's only when you're living with them every day that you'll realize that they're a fucking egotistical psychopath, right? So just watch out, or you'll get severely blindsided. You might end up committing to someone who objectively isn't right for you, and that's just more of what I'm saying here. That you like, and one thing you can do is literally just look around you, look at the reactions of your family. Your family might be experiencing sort of the novelty of having this person around them, but they're not romantically infatuated. Your mum and dad aren't romantically infatuated with your new partner. Your siblings aren't, your friends aren't, unless one of your friends is sexually attracted to your partner. You get what I'm saying, though? They have much more of an objective view on them. Ask them, what do you think? Tell me, I don't want you to sugarcoat me. What do you think? Is this person right? Do you see any flaws? Is there things I'm not recognizing? We don't do this, but we should. And if we don't do it explicitly, we should at least do it implicitly. Look at the relationships. Is there a connection there? Is there effort on both sides? Is there... And I'm not saying that your parents have to approve, because your parents have their own bullshit. But I'm saying, you know, overall, like, just have a look and take into account the evidence that is likely more objective than your evidence. It's not perfectly objective, but it's more objective, right? Another trap, huge trap, is that you can be lost chasing after it constantly. So romantic infatuation is a stage, it's not the goal. Now, because it's so yummy and juicy and sexual, it feels like the goal. It feels like, well, if my relationship isn't yummy and all the rest of it all the time, then there's something wrong. There is not something wrong. We're going to talk about this as we go on. I've called relationships a furnace, and I do that because they're not just a love shack. They are a furnace, right? And if you're in the furnace chasing after that yummy romantic infatuation, you're not going to find it, and you will conclude that you're in the wrong relationship. You might be in the wrong relationship, but I'd say it's much more likely that you've passed through romantic infatuation, and you don't want to be looking back there, because you're not going to get back there. You have to look forward, and you have to see this as a long-term companionship. It's not a love affair, and you cannot treat it as a love affair. Okay, folks, so I think I'm done for today. Wow, that was a lot to take in, but basically I just want you to really put this into perspective. It's a phase of the relationship. It's an important phase. It's yummy. It's lovely, yes, but it's not all. It's not all there is. There's much more to come. And you're actually going to develop much more as a person from the later stages. In romantic infatuation, you're not really growing much. You're just expressing raw energy, right? In later stages, you've actually developed a container for mutual growth. You know, whether you see that or not is a different matter, but I'm going to encourage you over the course of this month to see it like that, and to take on the challenge of using your furnace, this furnace you have, as a catalyst for your own growth. Okay, I will sign off there. Please join me next Wednesday at the same time. That is 7 p.m. Central European time, 8 p.m. UK time. I know there's plenty of people in the UK listening. And if you're in the US, it's 2 p.m. Eastern time. So thanks a lot for joining me today, and I will see you very soon for the next installment in this series on intimate relationships.